أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وصلى الله على محمد وعلى آله الطاهرين اللهم صل على محمد وعلى آل محمد. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and welcome to yet another session in our course from Ali alayhi salam to Al-Mahdi alayhi salam, and we're very close to reaching Al-Mahdi inshallah. So this is the 21st session of our course, and we're going to continue a discussion we started in the previous session. So in the previous session, we tried to look into a sort of system and organization that was set by the Imam across the Islamic empire, and a system they were controlling and were fulfilling their roles through their representative. And this is what we call the system of representatives. So we mentioned that the Imams had certain roles. They had very important roles to carry out in terms of guidance, in terms of protecting the deen, in terms of doing tarbiyah of the people, and so on. In terms of collecting, for example, the religious dues that the people had. And in order to carry out these actions, the Imam being one person cannot do it directly throughout the whole empire, from the east of the empire to the west of the empire. So obviously he needs helpers, he needs what we call, what we term Ansar. And so this is the Imams, starting from the time of Imam Sajjad, very slowly Imam Baqir, and then settled properly at the time of Imam Sadiq onwards. The Imams set a system where they would use representatives to carry out the roles of guidance and protecting the deen and tarbiyah and so on. And so we started discussing how the wukala and these companions of the Imams, how they help the Imams carry out these roles. In today's discussion, inshallah, we want to get a more insight into how this system actually worked, and you know, what were the dynamics behind the system, what did it involve, and so on. So again, for this very, very interesting discussion, we have with us Sheikh Meghnad. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikhna.
Alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
So thank you very much for being with us and for starting this very interesting discussion. So let's get started. So what was this network all about? If you can give us more detail about this.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitani rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Alhamdulillahi rabbil alamin wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi at-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajhum. So inshallah, in today's discussion, we want to look at how this system really worked, the system, this network of representatives. Inshallah, I want to divide the discussion into two. How did it work, number one, and number two, what was required for it to work properly? And then once we looked at these, inshallah, with plenty of very interesting stories, like yesterday, inshallah, and also then we'll follow up with discussing when things went wrong, basically, because Okay. Obviously it's a system that also has flaws.
Yep.
And inshallah, we'll look at that as well towards the end of today's session, inshallah. Right. So let's begin straight up. So the system, the network of representatives, works on a hierarchical structure, basically, right? Where kind of a pyramid, where you have obviously the Imam at the top, and then you have wukala that are the varying degrees, right? So as remember, wukala is plural wakil. So the highest member of this hierarchy is who we call a bab. Right. This term is used mainly in the terminology of the scholars that come later on, right, where they realize that there are certain people that work happens through them mainly, right? They're the closest to the Imam. They're the top of the kind of the chain, basically the triangle, managing everything directly under the Imam. These individuals are called bab. And then after that, you have wakala, so plural of wakil, in different regions. And some of these wukala are positioned in certain regions, right? They're stable wukala, we will call them. And certain wukala are mobile wukala. So they go between regions to region, reporting different things. So obviously, as a system needs to work in a way that the Imam has to have an overview of everything that happens.
And that communication between the regions and
exactly. All that needs to happen, for communication purposes, for monitoring purposes, right? For reporting back purposes, there are certain wukala that are mobile wukala that go to different regions. Checking everything. And obviously between all of that is a whole system of post office, which inshallah we'll talk about as well. So talking of bab, we find that Manaqib talks of bab basically. So as you find in his book, Shahr ibn Ashub talks about Yahya ibn Umm al-Tawil as kana babu. He was the bab of Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. We talked about Yahya yesterday as an amazing personality. So Keshi, for example, talks about him. Kana amma qala amma Yahya ibn Ummi Tawil, fakana yadhurul Futuwa. He was a very noble personality, right? Very amazing personality. كان إذا مشى في الطريق, when he would walk on the path, وضع الخلوق على رأسه ويمضغ اللبان. He would chew gum. ويطول ذيله, when he wear a long coat. Basically, he was a kind of a personality, right? And he would go into Kufa and really spread about this message of the Ahlul Bayt. And he was killed by the Banu Umayya very badly, right? His arms were cut, his legs were cut, and he was martyred very brutally. He was termed as the Bab for Imam Sajjad alayhi salam. Another person that is also a kind of a Bab, because you find that this individual, at some point of Imam Kadhim's life, he was in charge of pretty much everything. So there are certain periods of the Imam's life, very interesting. Okay, so it happens to Imam Kadhim, it happens also to later Imams, and obviously it's very specific to Ghibat al-Sughra as well, where everything is channeled through one person, right? So we'll talk about later as well that how meetings would happen with the Imam, even though there's a system of wakala, there's a babs, etc. But still, people are still allowed to come to the meeting, meet the Imam when it's possible. The wakala would have meetings together. However, there are certain points of time where, because of certain circumstances, these babs were in charge of pretty much everything. So Mufaddal, we talked about him yesterday as well, an amazing personality. Mufaddal, at one point, he's actually the bab for Imam Kadhim alayhi salam. So Kashi, it is reported that Musa ibn Bakr says, "Kuntu fi khidmati Abil Hasan." I was helping Imam Kadhim. "Walam akun ara shay'an yasilu ilayhi illa min nahiyat al Mufaddal." I did not see anything come to the Imam except through Mufaddal. Very interesting. وَرُبَّمَا رَأَيْتُ الرَّجُلُ يَجِيءُ بِالشَّيْءِ. And so sometimes a man will come and give something to Imam Kadhim. فَلَا يَقْبُلُهُ الْإِمَامُ مِنْهُ. The Imam won't accept from him, right? وَيَقُولُ أَوْصِلْهُ إِلَى الْمُفَضَّلِ. He will tell this person, whatever you brought for me, whatever you're coming with, go to Mufaddal, right? So the Mufaddal becomes the bab for the Imam, basically, that nobody comes to the Imam very short period of time except through Mufaddal ibn Umar. Mufaddal, a great personality. Again, in Ghibat al-Tusi, we find again the same concept that people bring from Medina mal, right, for money. فَقَالَ رُدَّهَا فَدْفَعْ إِلَى الْمُفَضَّلِ. Take this back from me, right, and give it to Mufaddal.
So what's the reason why Imam doesn't allow others to speak to him and sort of only makes his communication exclusive with Mufaddal?
Because of the pressure, mainly because of the pressure of the Banu Umayyah at that time. Remember, especially during Imam Kadhim time, right? We said, right? Imam Kadhim, remember the ta'bir that we used yesterday, the people where they said by Imam Kadhim that they went to Harun and said, there's two Khalifa on the earth right now, right? There's you and there's Imam Kadhim. The power that Imam Kadhim had was extremely great. And because of that, the Banu Abbas were very strict on him, right? And so to avoid dangering other people, to avoid exposing the underground system of representative, and for other various reasons, it was best that everything happened through one person, through Mufaddal. Muhammad ibn Sinan is mentioned as the bab for Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Uthman ibn Sa'id is mentioned as the bab for Imam Jawad alayhi salam, etc. We will find this word of bab mentioned in the books of Rijal.
Okay, before you continue, from the few names you've mentioned, if anybody's looked into the Rijal of some of these people, we find that people such as Mufaddal and Muhammad ibn Sanan, there's some doubt cast about their personality. So how are such people considered as Bab?
So first and foremost, we'll talk about this later as well, how the Imam themselves at times would actually be negative towards certain people, would say negative things about certain people. And the simple reason is because they want to protect their lives, right? Number one, we'll talk about that later. Number two, these people are very highly positioned people, very close to the Imam, right? And you've seen in history that this happens normally in every society, happens when you have jealousy, when you have enemies. Obviously, they're going to throw words at people, right? They're going to spread rumors about people. And these people, individuals, were so highly ranked and were dealing with so much money and they had the fame, etc., that people would come and do tuhmat against them, right? And thirdly, whatever we say about them, yes, they're not ma'asum. It's possible that sometimes they would make mistakes. So for example, we'll talk about Ibn Khunais, for example, right? That they made some mistakes as well, right? We don't, see, it's very easy for us to take one simple line from, for example, Rijal al-Kashi, for example, and say, okay, this guy, that's it, we put him aside completely. So very, we need to stop looking at it from black and white perspective. People are not just like good, bad. It's like when I speak to my child, right, my three-year-old, so there's good people and bad people. I remember once I was telling the story to my son, and he was like, I was just about to start the story telling about this person. He's like, wait. I hardly just said his name. He's like, good person, bad person, right? Like, see, this is how children think, right? There's good people and bad people. No, that in history, and normally this is how it works. People, good people make bad mistakes, and bad people can do good things as well. Like, it's not such a black and white system.
Yeah, but there's a lot of gray area. Can we say though some of these might have turned their backs later on as well?
Yes, as we'll talk about as well. Yeah, as well. We'll talk about waqf as well. That very high wakala of the imam turned their backs to the imams. The imam had to come and solve it. We'll talk about this later as well, right? So these things are there. We don't deny them. Mm. But we have enough indication to say that these individuals were, for example, very close to the imam, and they were part of the whole system, right? Yeah. Other words that I use, for example, safir is used, especially when doing ghibat al-sughra. It's a terminology used about the wakala. Qayyim is used as well. I think we mentioned yesterday as well.
Yeah.
This was found in the hadith specifically. Imam Sadiq mentions Ibn Khunais as his qayyim. Na'ib is mentioned in the riwayat, right? And also wakil is mentioned in the riwayat specifically. So for example, if you look at this riwayat, let's talk about two individuals. One is Abu Ali ibn Rashid. So very interestingly, we find this. Qala nuskhatul kitab ma ibn Rashid ila jama'atil mawali alladhina hum bi Baghdad. Al-Muqimina biha wal-Mada'in wal-Sawad wa ma yaliha. There's a letter that comes from Imam Hadi alayhi salam to the people of Baghdad, Mada'in, and Sawad. Right? In this letter, what does the Imam say? I'll just mention this line over here. Wa inni, the Imam says, I aqamtu Aba Ali ibn Rashid maqama Ali ibn Hussein ibn Abd al-Rabbi. That I'm placing Ali ibn Rashid in the place of this other person. Wa man kana qablahu min wukala'ihi. Right? And in the place of all of my other wakala, and placing him as what? As the wakil, right? So the term of it is what is used is wakala. Mm-hmm. So the word is used. People know that this now person in the city of Baghdad, Mada'in, and Sawad, Ali ibn Rashid is a new wakil in place of the others. In the time of Imam Hassan Askari as well, Uthman ibn Sa'id, again, amazing personality. We find that, فَقَالَ لَهُ سَيِّدُنَا أَبُو مُحَمَّدٍ إِمْذِي يَا Uthman, he tells Uthman, go, فَإِنَّكَ الْوَكِيلُ. You are the wakil, right? This is an appointment of the imam to Uthman. They say, you're the wakil, wa thiqatu al-na'amun, and you are a thiqa, and you're protecting this system, and somebody that we trust and worthy of the authority.
Yeah.
So how the system works in a very beautiful way is that the imam appoints wakala, right? So they don't just happen to be taking up the position. This is a very critical point, right? That the imam appoints them. It has to be an appointment from the imam. Nobody can say, I'm a wakil of the imam. Just it's like
again
that.
That same spirit that when Allah appoints the imam, and again here the authority comes because Allah, the imam gives that authority. So that wilaya continues only through nas, that's direct appointment. Yeah.
Exactly. So authority has to be appointed, and imam over here comes and appoints his wakala, right? And then he also informs the people of this authority, right? Writes a letter to the people, expresses his choice of the wakil for the people, so they're aware as well, right? Obviously, this happens within the system, right? And we'll talk about how things need to work for this to be very clear. And also, imam gives instructions. As we mentioned, the wakala are not in the same categories and positions, right? In terms of places where they're placed, shall we'll talk about that as well, right? In terms of what roles and responsibilities that they have, right? Certain wakala collect funds. Certain wakala are there in charge of just bringing the funds back. Certain wakala actually distribute the funds. Certain wakala are doing different things.
Right? Guidance is a separate thing as well, right?
Yeah. So some wakala will be there. Okay, you have to go and sort out this confusion over there, for example. Answer the doubts regarding imama, for example, right? So wakala have different positions. And the instruction is clear for the imam. This is your role right now, right? And they will not be allowed to go beyond that role as well. So just to give a couple of examples. So in terms of appointment, very beautiful, right? Muhammad ibn Ibrahim is the wakil of Imam Jawad alayhi salam, right? In Hamadan, in Iran. What's interesting is that he writes to Muhammad ibn Ibrahim before the death of the previous wakil, who is Yahya ibn Imran. So Yahya ibn Imran is the wakil of the ninth Imam, right? Before Yahya passes away, right? Ibrahim ibn Muhammad receives a letter from Imam Jawad, and Imam Jawad tells him, do not open this letter until Yahya ibn Imran dies. So he takes his letter, he puts it, and he doesn't open it. When Yahya ibn Imran dies, okay, in the grave, in the cemetery itself, at the burial, Ibrahim ibn Muhammad opens the letter and he realizes that I am the wakil, the next wakil. Right? That's because Hamadan and in that period is so sensitive that I don't want any delay basically. By the time I get the news of the death comes and people are then confused, etc., straight away, whenever this person dies, you're the next wakil I appointed. What's interesting is that this, it doesn't happen within a few days, also a couple of years is what that goes, many years. This is in Manaqib as well. Very interesting. Once the same individual, like just to show how this appointment works. So as you mentioned, Ibrahim ibn Muhammad receives a letter from Imam Jawad way before he becomes a wakil. Just that the previous wakil, when he passes away, open the letter and he realizes, okay, I'm the wakil. When this happens then, once he becomes the wakil, the Imam then writes him another letter. قَدْ وَصَلَ الْحِسَابِ تَقَبَّلَ اللَّهُ مِنْكَ وَرَضِيَ عَنْهُمْ. This is in Kashi. It praises him, etc. And then he says, وَقَدْ بَعَثْتُ إِلَيْكَ مِنَ الدَّنَانِيرِ. I'm sending you some money, right? I'm also sending you some cloth, right? فَبَارَكَ لَكَ فِيهِ. It seems like this is kind of like a payment for Ibrahim, or kind of a helping hand for Ibrahim to get to his work done. And then the Imam says, وَقَدْ كَتَبْتُ إِلَى النَّظْرِ أَمَرْتُهُ أَنْ يَنْتَهِ عَنْكَ وَعَنِ التَّعَرُّضِ لَكَ. The Imam says, I also wrote a letter to other people that they should stop coming against you, right? Because we'll talk about this later as well. Some of the people would just get up and say, I'm a wakil of the Imam, right? Or there will be some confusion. So the Imam would write letters to them as well. So look, you guys stop fooling around, right? Stop messing about, okay? The wakil is who? Is Ibrahim ibn Muhammad. See how the Imam is very careful. He appoints a wakil. He tells other people not to interfere in the system. You guys are not part of this. Or right now, I don't need you right now. You just don't make any move. Don't disrupt the work of Ibrahim ibn Muhammad. And then, وَكَتَبْتُ إِلَىٰ أَيُّوبِ أَمَرْتُ بِذَلِكَ أَيْضًا. I wrote to Ayyub telling the same thing as well. وَكَتَبْتُ إِلَىٰ مَوَالِيَّ بِحَمَدَانِ. And I also wrote to the Shias of Hamadan, كِتَابًا أَمَرْتُهُمْ بِطَاعَتِكَ. Telling them to obey you, Ibrahim ibn Muhammad. Right? وَالْمَصِيرِ إِلَىٰ أَمْرِكَ وَأَنْ لَا وَكِيلَ لِي سِوَاكَ. There's no wakil other than you. Right? How beautiful. Imam Jawad tells his wakil, look, I've sorted everything out for you. I wrote to the people. I wrote to the people who were going against you. I sorted everything out, basically. This is the story of Hamadan. This is how Imam Jawad sorts out this organization in the place of Hamadan with his wakil. Another story is about Uthman. So Uthman, in the time of Imam Hassan Askari, gets appointed, and people around there as well. So just going very quickly, this in Ghibat al-Tusi. If you remember, so the story is with Ishaq ibn Sa'id. If you remember him, we talked about the mosque in Qum that you watched the video yesterday. Ishaq ibn Sa'id comes and says, who should I come to ask my questions and my general teaching and upliftment and tarbiyah, etc. in your absence, because I can't come to you, etc. The Imam tells, هَذَا أَبُو عَمْرٍ. Right? ثِقَةُ الْأَمِينَ مَا قَالَهُ لَكُمْ فَعَنِّي يَقُولُ. Whatever he says is from me. Right? So he shows that this is Amr. Right? Uthman ibn Sa'id. At the end of the report, فَكُنَّ كَثِيرًا مَا نَتَذَاكَرُ هَذَا الْقَالُ وَنَتَوَاصَفُ جَلَالَةَ مَحَلِّ أَبِي عَمْرٍ. Right, this situation, this appointment of this wakil was spreading out. People knew about this. They would remember this. They would know the station of this individual as well. Right. So this is to show that one, there's an appointment that happens. Two, the people are aware of this as well. Right. Mm. Also remember, it's still secretive. Right. It's not like a public knowledge, at least for some people. Right. But people have the news that okay, these wakils, especially the bab, because obviously. Amr, so Uthman ibn Sa'id is a bab for the Imam as well. Well, we find that this system, this network of representative is so organized, it's so beautiful, especially during the last three or four Imams, Imam Hadi, Imam Jawad, Imam Hadi, Imam Hassan Askari. It becomes extremely organized in a very beautiful fashion, right? You have, and again, this research has been done, I'm not going to go through all of it, but you have regions that are allocated to wakala. So if you look at the map, for example, you have obviously Medina and Makkah, right? And if you go south, you have Yemen, right? And Bahrain as well, there as well. On the west, you have Egypt, Misr, right? And North Africa. Then Basra and Kufa have their own regions. Samarra, Baghdad, and Mada'en, right? All these regions that come together. North of Iraq towards Turkey, you have Mosul and the cities close to Turkey of today. And then in Iran, you have these different regions of Ray and Qom, etc. A bit more north, you have Khorasan, and then go up to Azerbaijan, there's the Wakalas over there. Come down south, you have Sistan. All these are regions that the Imam has, kind of they had a map basically at that time, where the Imam knows exactly which Wakil to appoint in which region, and he knows exactly how things are going in each region, right? And you find that sometimes, let me bring an example over here. Very interestingly, at the time of Imam Hadi alayhi salam, the 10th Holy Imam, right? You have a Wakil called Ayyub ibn Nuh ibn al-Darraj, right? Amazing person, right? We'll talk about him later. He's the Wakil of Kufa. And you have a Wakil called Ali ibn Rashid, we just talked about him. He's the Wakil of Baghdad and Mada'in, right? What happens is that these two, for some reason, okay, they kind of interfere in each other's work. They're in two different regions. They're two both great Wakils of the Imam. But for some reason, they interfere in each other's work. It means that this person takes money or wujuhat from the other region, from people from the other region, and vice versa. Straight away, the Imam communicates to them a letter, or fi kitabi akhar, to both of them, he writes a letter. أنا أمرك يا أيوب بن نوح أن تقطع الإكثار بينك وبين أبي علي. Right? You guys need to stop like meddling into each other's affairs, basically. وأن يلزم كل واحد منكما ما وكل به. Like, do that which I've entrusted with you in your regions. Right? Don't take from other people, from other regions, and don't have irtibat, you don't have relationship with people from that region. There's a wakil in that region, he'll deal with those people, you deal with your own region. And then he also writes, وَأَمُرُكَ يَا أَبَا عَلِي بِمِثْلِ مَا أَمُرُكَ يَا أَيُّبُ. Right? So both of them, he writes them, stop interfering. This is how Imam Hadi is very particular, right? Because obviously it's an underground system, things need to work in a very systematic, very organized way for it to run perfectly, perfectly fine. People don't get confused. People are able to do things. Nobody's life is in danger.
Also, too many people are not known by others, right? So exactly. The regions should not know more than their own wakil. So if anything's going to leak out, then you don't leak out too much information.
Exactly. Right? So this is very beautiful. The Imam has spread out the wakala in different regions and they're supposed to do their own work. Now, these wakala, they all connect together. Now, the connection is so beautiful, right? It's like, you know, the veins in your body, right? They spread out through your body, but they come back to where? They come back to the heart, right? This is how the system works. The heart is the Imam of the time, right? The wakala are spread out in different regions, right? And between them, there's this movement that's happening. And this movement happens in many ways. One is meetings, right? Two is letters. And three is kind of funds, right? Let me talk about these very briefly. So one is meetings. Meetings is very important. So there's many types of meetings. Certain meetings is where the people would come to the Imam themselves. So people would come to the Imam. In certain periods, it was possible, right? We find some very beautiful stories. For example, we mentioned yesterday where large groups of people would come to meet Imam Hadi alayhi salam, Imam Hassan Askari alayhi salam, right? They'll be going in and out. And they're like, we're kind of waiting in a queue as well, right? We mentioned this hadith yesterday. They're waiting in a queue, waiting for the first group to finish. Kind of reminding where we went to when we go to visit Ayatollah Sistani, right? Yeah. You wait, there's a few rooms, and Imam comes from one room to another, and you go from one room to another. Kind of like kind of situation exactly, right? And the hadith described how the previous group left, and we came in, and we sat down, and other of the companions sat down, and there was a discussion of the companions that closed the Imam, the wakil that there, the present wakils of the Imam, and the discussion that happened, basically. So those are one type of meeting. Then you have other type of meeting where the wakala would come and have meeting with the Imam. Right, very beautiful meetings, but they would come and there would be a wakala meeting. Right, very interesting. I'm not sure if I mentioned it over here, where I'll mention it later as well. Where the Imam would have meeting with the wakala during iftar, they would have iftar together and have meeting afterwards. Very interestingly, the wakil says that one day I was, because of fasting, I was feeling weak a bit, so I stayed home. I didn't come to the iftar to the Imam's house, and I stayed home and had a very small iftar. Right, after that, I went to the Imam's house, it's a meeting, right. Went to the Imam's house, the Imam told me, go have iftar, go have meat for your iftar, because meat will give you some energy. Right? Mm-hmm. So beautiful. One of the places where meetings would happen, so this is one thing. Another type of meeting is the meetings of the wakala themselves without the Imam. We find that happening many times. During the time of Waqf, for example, we find that this happened. During the time of Imam Jawad, in some books, we find that it's possible this meeting happened where the wakala got together to discuss the situation.
So was that a positive or negative situation? So in the waqf, would you mean those who did waqf got together?
No, the people who were trying to solve the issue. Same with the with Imam Jawad being a young boy becoming the Imam. Again, the wakala got together to discuss what was happening. How can we explain the situation, or how can we understand the situation at least. We talked about the time when Imam Hadi became the Imam, how the Wakala got together, they brought a witness, or they brought a letter from Imam Jawad, etc., to sort the situation out. Basically, the Wakala would have meetings as well together, where they would discuss things. It also happened during the time of the 12th Imam as well, where the Wakil, the Naib, would get together with other individuals, Ashab, they would have regular discussions, basically. And then one important place where meetings would happen is Hajj. So it is known that Hajj is where people get together, yeah, right? And because everybody is coming together, this is the best place where meetings happen.
There's no suspicion, basically.
There's no suspicion, right? I mean, you can hide very nicely over there. And because you're meeting everybody, and this is the place where, and you, this is why you have so many beautiful stories about Arafah and Mina, right? Where the Imam themselves will be present, and they will try their best to be present in Hajj, right? And the Wakala will be present as well, meeting all the Wakala together at that point. Everybody goes to Hajj. Across the empire, we all move from our places to go to Hajj. This is where meetings happen. Very interesting, you find about Mina as well. This is where there's so many riwayat about Mina. What's mustahab in Mina? We don't have too many du'as for reciting in Mina during those 3 days. In Mina, we're told to do what? To meet one another. To discuss with one another. Right? We have specific hadith in Mina, talk about what's happening in your regions. Right? So the Shias will get together, talk about what's happening. The Wakala get together. It's a chance to discuss things that are happening. So this is the system where meetings would happen. The other thing that's very, very crucial, probably fundamental for this system, is letters, right? So in order to make sure that everybody's safe, the Wakala, etc., the system that was used is the system of postage, right? So we can call it postage today. Basically, there's a massive system of post office that works. Now, the postmen can be Wakala themselves. So sometimes you have Wakala that become postmen, basically. Their role is to be a postman. They would go between cities and make sure the communication happens between the Wakala and with the Imam, right? And so you have plenty of stories about these individuals that would kind of rotate around the system between cities to make sure that the letters reach the Imam. But many a times as well, you find that the normal postage will be used. Some normal individual will be used to transfer letters. And this would happen normally. And sometimes it would create confusion. Sometimes it would have its own challenges, basically. But this is one of the main ways whereby letters happen. Now, letters are called tawqi'at, right? One of the words, at least, that is used is tawqi'at. Now, there's a whole discussion about what does tawqi'at mean. I don't want to go into it. But this is very, very strong. And you find this word used in hadith that the tawqi' has reached from the imam, for example. Just to give an example, this is mentioned in Kashi, where one of the Wakil of the Imam, his name is Ishaq ibn Ismail, Wakil of the 11th Imam, he goes to Samarra with loads of letters. So he has letters from other Wakala, from the Shias, for the Imam. When he comes to Samarra, he cannot meet the Imam, unfortunately. Right? And somehow or the other, the Imam comes to know that he's here, and the Imam sends him a letter, and writes him a long letter, a very beautiful letter. The point I want to mention over here is this, that أَنَّهُ خَرَجَ لِإِسْحَاقِ بْنِ إِسْمَعِيلِ مِنْ أَبِي مُحَمَّدْ تَوْقِيعٌ. Right? There has come from the 11th Imam a tawqi' for Ishaq ibn Ismail. Yeah, Ishaq ibn Ismail, etc. Who would write these letters? Sometimes the wakil would write the letter. So the Imam had a scribe, for example, or he would tell his wakil, you write the letter. Sometimes the Imam himself would write a letter. So for example, in Kataba alayhi salam, the 11th Imam, if I'm not mistaken, إِلَى عَلِي ibn Bilal. In what year as well, we have this, what year this letter was written. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. The letter is a very beautiful letter. It's a tawqi' from the Imam. وَكَتَبْتُ بِخَطِّي. I have written this with my own khat. Now this is very interesting, because one of the ways that people would decipher that this is really the letter from the Imam, because obviously you say, okay, can people like forge letters?
Forge letters, yeah.
You can forge letters, right? One of the ways that people would be able to decipher this letter from the Imam, and this is why the Imam would say, for example, كَتَبْتُ بِخَطِّي, is because the handwriting of the Imam would be known. So, and not everybody would know this. The Shias normally would not know specifically which handwritten. So who would know this? The Wakala themselves. So one of the things that the Wakil, very specific knowledge that they had was what? The khat and the handwriting of the Imam. A very beautiful story. Ahmad ibn Ishaq comes to Imam Hassan Askari. دَخَلْتُ عَلَى أَبِي دِسَنَ الْكَافِي دَخَلْتُ عَلَى أَبِي مُحَمَّدَ عَلَيْهِ السَّلَامِ فَسَأَلْتُ أَنْ يَكْتُبَ لِأَنْظُرَ إِلَى خَطِّهِ. I told the Imam write for me so I can see your handwriting.
Mm.
Right? فَأَعْرِفَهُ, so I can recognize it. Right? So the Imam says, of course, then he writes in terms of that there's different types of writing, right? مِن بَيْنِ الْقَلَمِ الْغَلِيذِ إِلَى الْقَلَمِ الدَّقِيقِ, right? The different types of writing. He writes and shows him, etc. And then very interestingly, Ahmed ibn Ishaq, in his mind, he tells, I wish the Imam would give me this pen, right? And the Imam also gives him this pen as well, right? فَقُلْتُ فِي نَفْسِي وَهُوَ يَكْتُبُ, I told myself whilst he was writing, أَسْتَوْهِبُهُ الْقَلَمَ, I wish he would, or I would ask him to grant me, to give me this qalam, and the Imam then gives him the pen. But just to show, basically, so the wakil goes to the Imam and says, can you please write something? I want to see your writing, so I can know your khat, recognize your handwriting. Yeah. This is very important. Another thing is the stamps, obviously, of the Imams. The Imams had specific stamps, and you find that when the wakil would receive a letter from the Imam, he would first check, is this from the Imam or not? Very interesting. For example, we have one where the wakil, we'll talk about this, so Jabir ibn Jawfi, when he receives a letter from the Imam, he first looks at it, makes sure he knows, he double checks it, this is from the Imam, yes, it's come from the Imam, then he takes it, kisses it, respects it, opens it with a lot of love and affection. Very interesting, in the time of Imam Zaman alayhi salam, there's a guy called Ahmad ibn Hilal, right? He's a Sufi. He's condemned by the 12th Imam in a letter, right? And he's cursed very severely for very negative kind of asceticism, basically. The Imam cursed him because he's a big guy. And like these ascetics usually are like, they've got signs of piety, right?
Yeah.
Apparent piety. So people start doubting whether, or maybe like, are we not sure did the Imam really curse him or not? The Imam writes a second letter, right? In which he said, it's a longer letter as well. We confirm that yes, this guy is being cursed by me. And then he tells in this letter, this is in the Nikashi as well, فَإِنَّهُ لَا أُذْرَ لِأَحَدٍ مِّن مَوَالِينَا فِي التَّشْكِيكِ فِي مَا يُؤَدِّيهِ أَنَّ ثِقَاتُنَا. Right? There shouldn't be any excuse for any of the Shias, any of our Shias, that they should doubt that what has come to me, to them through my representatives.
Mm.
Right? Why they shouldn't doubt? One of the things is because my khat is clear, my handwriting is clear. Right, the wakil has told this is from my handwriting, right? So there's no reason for you guys to doubt. In terms of the content of the letters, so what kind of content would the letters have? So you have, I'll mention a list over here. We say for each of them we can give examples, but we'll skip that. So one of them, and we talked about before as well, is letters to the wakil appointing him as a wakil, right? Another is giving instructions to the wakala, okay, of their positions and what their responsibilities and tasks are. One important content of letters to the Shias and to the Wakala is to answer questions. Now, these questions sometimes are ahkami questions, so fiqh-related questions. Sometimes they're questions related to belief, etc. So different people write to the Imams about their questions they have, and the Imam will reply to them. And we have so many beautiful examples of these, right? If we had time, we'd open these questions and the answer, the Imam would write to them. Sometimes we have letters, tawqiat, with instructions. So very interestingly, if in last month, in the month of Rajab, if you read all the du'as, there's two du'as that we have, which are tawqi'at min nahiyat al-muqaddas, from the 12th Holy Imam, right? Mm. They're letters from the Imam.
So the word tawqi is used specifically for letters coming from the Imam Mahdi, not for any Imam.
No, it's also used for other Imams.
For the Imams.
Yeah. You have letters to confirm the receipt of khums. Very interesting. So like, just like you give a receipt, basically. There's a letter saying that I have received what you sent to me, right? So this is important as well. You have letters about the different sects and different ideological issues that come up, where the Imam, for example, would curse somebody very strongly, right? So this person is doing something really bad. He's not supposed to be doing this. Or for example, revealing certain things about people that are wrong. Or for example, distancing himself with certain people, saying this person is not my wakil anymore. I distance myself from him, right? Telling people off as well. We have letters where the Imam will write something and say, stop doing this. For example, we saw when there was the ikhtilaf between the wakil in Mada and in Kufa. The people will sometimes ask for du'as, the Imam will reply. The Imam will also send condolences letters also. We have some letters that are condolences letters, etc. So this carries on basically. So different types of letters and content that happen in the letters. There's one thing I'd like to mention over here, which I should have mentioned earlier as well, talking about the importance of letters. We have a very beautiful hadith in Al-Kafi about how Imam Al-Kadhim alayhi salam, whilst he's in prison, he's still in touch with his wakala through letters. Mm. This is very important because, you know, Imam Qadhi spent a lot of time in prison, right? Unfortunately, despite the fact that he was in prison, he was still running the system full on, right? And one of the ways he was doing this was through letters. So we find, for example, that Hussein ibn Mukhtar says, قَالَ خَرَجْتُ إِلَيْنَا أَلْوَاحَ مِنْ أَبِي الْحَسَنِ right? وَهُوَ بِالْحَبْسِ أَحْدِ إِلَى أَكْبَرِ وُلْدِ etc. Tell me what to do and what not to do, basically. This is from Imam Kadhim alayhi salam. This system obviously has its own challenges and stuff, right? So we talked about this post office challenges, right? So we talked about, for example, yesterday we mentioned the story of Zakir ibn Adam. We said that two messengers come to Zakir ibn Adam, two postmen come to Zakir ibn Adam saying that we want to collect khums. And because there's an ikhtilaf between them, Zakir ibn Adam refuses to give anything to them.
He's suspicious about it.
Yeah. Exactly. So they go back to tell the Imam, the Imam sends another person then, and he goes and collects it, right? There's a very beautiful story, just to give another example, whereby a person is given, I'll mention it very briefly over here, I'll come back to the story later as well. One of the postmen of the Imam, one of the servants of the Imam, is given a stick. It says, take this stick to my wakil. The person takes the stick and he rides towards the wakil. He reaches a street, a very narrow street. And in this street, there's a guy with a donkey who's blocking the path. Right, gets angry at him, says, what are you doing? He takes a stick and hits donkey with it, right, to get him moving. And lo and behold, the stick breaks and a letter comes out from it. It was actually a hollow stick with a letter inside. And this guy realizes, he quickly jumps off, picks up the thing. Now, alhamdulillah, nobody realizes. The guy on the donkey gets really angry, right? Shouts and screams and insults the Imam, his master, basically. So, and whatever happens, the guy just quickly wraps up everything, just goes and delivers what he's supposed to deliver. When he comes back, he gets a big turning off, right? The Imam is waiting for him and tells him, like, why did you have to hit? Why don't you know these things are very important? Like, basically, the whole story goes on. Just to show like how this service also sometimes had to be very secretive like that. Mm-hmm. Certain message had to be passed in a very secretive way as well. We have other stories whereby certain wukala, especially during the latest period as well, they would have certain positions, they would take certain jobs to make sure that they can do this transfer of letters and the transfer of money in a very secretive way. So for example, we have these wukala that were oil sellers, for example. Right, so through selling and buying things, they will nicely pick up a letter or hand in over a letter, basically. Mm. Right, it's very easy. You're buying oil, well, I'll give you the money back, I'll also give you a letter as well. And because I know you, you're waiting for something from me, then these things happen like this as well. So the post office system has different ways. It's official, official postman as well, and there's the secret. So we find that sometimes even a maid is used, a lady is used to bring letters. Nobody will suspect a lady, for example, to carry on a letter from the Imam to one of his wakils. So this system of letters is very, very important. And we have a list of these tawqiyat. So
are many of them preserved until today?
You'd be surprised, yeah. Above 50, 60 letters. There's books written about, specifically about the letters from the Ahlul Bayt.
And what about their authentication?
So we can verify them. Sometimes we can't go back to the whole science behind verification of these things. But many of them are like, we can't doubt them, basically.
Okay.
They've been preserved in very reliable books. Regarding the transfer of funds, right? Again, this is something important as well. So funds are transferred in different ways. One of the ways that is transferred, as I mentioned, the wakil himself gets up and brings it to the imam. Mm-hmm. Or the people themselves many a time. So you find, for example, min Khurasan, a group of people will come. Or many times a particular individual will be selected from different cities and he will be told, can you collect homes and come with you during Hajj, for example, right? And so we have plenty of stories about how groups of people would come and they would present their wujuhat, their homes, zakat, some funds to the imam or to the wakil. And the wakil would then bring it to the imam in different ways and forms.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, this channeling will happen both ways as well. Sometimes the Imam himself would send. So just like we saw the letter, for example, to Ali ibn Rashid, sends not just money, but also a piece of cloth, for example, for the wakil himself. Interestingly, we have other ways as well where money is transferred. So for example, we have certain places where people, when the Imam would need money, people would be available for it. There's a very beautiful story. This is mentioned in Kashir about Mufaddal. The hadith is on the screen. I'll just summarize it. So Mufaddal is a very, in Farsi they say khaki, is a very humble person, mingles with everybody basically. So some of the companions, some of the older companions, kind of like the holier than thou companions, they complained to the Imam that Mufaddal has lots of these friends that are pigeon sellers, and they're like kind of the bazaar people, basically, like normal people that don't really take care too much about the religion, basically, right? Mm. So very interestingly, the Imam then writes a letter to them and says, give this letter to Mufaddal when you go visit him. So they come to the house of Mufaddal and they hand this letter to the Imam, from the Imam to Mufaddal. Mufaddal opens, and summarizing very briefly, and says, interesting, the Imam is saying that we need a very big amount of money right now. You guys are companions, please arrange this money right now. It's urgent. So these guys look at each other. It's like, you're talking about a huge amount right now. Like, we're not going to be able to gather this amount right now. So Mufaddal smiles. So it's okay. Makes dinner for them, right? So they make dinner for them. Says, serve dinner. They say, you guys eat dinner. I'm coming back in a bit. He goes and goes to those pigeon sellers and his friends from the bazaar. He says that the Imam has said that we need a certain amount of money. It's a big, large sum. I need it now. So they says, go home. We'll bring it for you. He goes home, and these guys come within very quickly. Before the companions, the big guys, finish their dinner, these pigeon sellers are there with the money. And when they see these companions, they realize that, you know, we made a mistake.
Mm.
Very interesting story. The point I want to cross over here is that this is how sometimes when the Imam requires money in certain places, the individuals are ready to help out. Another way that money is transferred as well is through what we call serafi. So during that time, because obviously now the empire has increased, obviously security is a very important issue as well. Sometimes when you would go between cities and the roads, you get thieves, yeah, right, who steal money, etc. So that's the system of serafi, right? Serafi is where I would collect some money from you and I would appoint somebody else elsewhere to give you that money, basically.
Yeah. So you have money stored in a certain region.
Exactly.
You collect over here and you tell him to take from your money and give it over there.
Yeah. Standard money transfer. I don't want to use names of companies that we know today. But standard money transfer from one country to another country, basically.
Yeah.
Where you collect from, you give in one country, you get in another country.
Yeah.
So you have these. So this was also used as well. We have certain companions that were actually serafi, right? And the Imam would use them as well. Very interesting is the story of Ali ibn Yaqtin as well. So the Imam would have particular people positioned in very high level governmental levels. And one of the things that they would be useful for, we'll talk about Ali Yaqtin, don't worry about it, we'll talk about it in a bit.
Okay.
One thing that would be very useful is for this money transfer, basically. And so this is why you find that many times the house of the Imam would not have any money.
Mm.
On one side, you find that the people are saying that there's two khalifas because of how money is collected, right? At the time of Imam Kadhim, there's so much money going in and out, but the house of Imam Kadhim doesn't always have too much money in it, right? So one of the reasons is because money is transferred. It doesn't remain in one position only. It's very quickly distributed. It's very quickly collected. It's collected in a specific way that there's not necessarily so much transfer of money as well. So this is the importance of this transferring of money as well that happens in this very beautiful system that Imam has in place. Lastly, before we carry on to the next point, is that the Imam would be very careful to take care of his wakala. This is a very important point as well. We mentioned this yesterday briefly, so I want to come back to this as well, that this system obviously needs money. A system, such huge system, requires money. Post office don't come for free, right? The wakala also need to eat and have their own bread and butter, etc. So you find that the Imam were very careful to take care of their wakils as well. So you find that they would also help their wakala, not in terms of just finances, but in terms of different things as well.
Mm.
So for example, we find that the Imam would gift them, one of the things that you find very often is the gift of kafan. The Imam would gift them their kafans, right?
That seems a bit, you know, asking for their death, no?
No,
in
no.
In today's world, if you give somebody a...
No, on the contrary. If many people, when they come to ziyarat, for example, over here, they buy kafan, they touch it with the dharih of the Imam. It has tabarruk. It really is useful. And like, let me just say one very, very beautiful hadith. This is about Abu Hashim Ja'fari, one of the wakil of the Imam. He actually is imprisoned, right? So shakawtu ila Abi Muhammad alayhi salam diq al-habsi. So he's in trouble, basically. Because of that, he doesn't have enough money, but he feels shy of asking the Imam for some help. The Imam, so he says, فَأَرَدْتُ أَنْ أَتْرُبَ مِنْهُ دَنَانِيرْ فِي الْكِتَابِ فَاسْتَحْيَيْتُ. In my letter to him, I was going to write to him that I need some money, but I felt shy. I didn't write anything. The Imam sends him some money and says, don't be shy. Like, we're taking care of you guys, right? So the Imam is very, and we mentioned the story about where the Imam would tell the companion that have iftar with meat because it'll give you some energy. Mm-hmm. So you find many different circumstances where the Imam would grant gifts to the wakil as well to make sure because he takes care of these wakil. I mean, the Imam wants the best for everyone. That's the beauty of this thing, right? For the wakil, for the people. That's why this whole system is there for Islam. For the Muslims, right? For the growth of the Muslim. This is the main point.
So this is an important thing because, you know, you took us from an idea of the Imams being people who sit in their houses and, you know, just doing ibadat and zikr and not caring about the world, to an Imam who's, you know, controlling a whole empire. Yeah. So it's important for us to realize that even what he's doing this, but again, what's the purpose? He's not a businessman. He's not a person who, you know, who has a corporate and he's after money. He's trying to perform his actions and his responsibilities towards the people.
The role that we talked about.
The roles that we talked about. And all this is through that mercy that they have for the people. Yeah. Rahmatan lil alameen. All of them are like that. And they want guidance for the people. But obviously, the world necessitates that, you know, people who are poor, they need to be given money, charity, and so on. So these are really important.
Yeah.
Okay, so before we continue, inshallah, let's take a short break. So brothers and sisters, inshallah, we'll be back in a few moments to continue and finish off this very interesting discussion.
الهيدر ابو تراب اصحاب المهدي شباب اصحاب المهدي شباب همه دستا بیاد بالا دست تو بگیر بالا ماشاءالله قال الهيدر ابو تراب اصحاب المهدی شباب اصحاب المهدی قال الهیدر ابو تراب قال الهیدر اصحاب المهدی شباب اصحاب کسی دستش پایین نباشه قال الهیدر ابو تراب قال الهیدر ابو تراب اصحاب المهدی شباب از جوون تراب ای جوون حسین منم جوونم ای جوون حسین من بگو ای جوون حسین منم جوونم ای جوون حسین قمت بجونم ای جوون حسین منم جوونم ای جوون حسین قامت بجونم ای جوون حسین دعا کنم شب من خودم رو به آقام برسونم دعا کن که تو بینشونیم بیادو دعا کن که توی جوونیم بیادو دعا کن که بی پرده نور رو ببینم دعا کن که صبح ظهور رو ببینم قال الهیدر ابو تراب قال الهیدر ابو تراب اصحاب المهدی شباب قال الهیدر ابو تراب قال الهیدر ابو تراب الان شاگرد مسیح یارون ما ماشاءالله اصحاب یه بار دیگه ای جوون حسین منم جوونم ای جوون حسین قامت بجونم ای جوون حسین دعا کن حسین قامت بجونم ای جوون حسین دعا کنم شب من خودم رو به آقام برسونم من خودم رو به آقام برسونم دعا کن که دوبینشونیم بیادم دعا کن که توی جوونیم بیادم دعا کن که بی پرده نور رو ببینم دعا کن چه صبح ظهور رو ببینم. قال الهیده ابو تراب و قال الهیده اصحاب المهدی شباب و
Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters. Welcome back to the session. So we're discussing with Sheikh Miqdad on the system of representatives that was established by the Imams. And we talked about what the system was all about and how it was functioning. So Sheikh, let's continue the discussion.
So we talked about how it worked. We talked about the different wakalas in the place and the communication, etc. There are certain things for this system to work, right? Certain things need to be in place. Mm-hmm. This is very, very important, right? And what we're here for important things regarding the system, that without these things the system can't work, right? It's a flawed system in its first place from the beginning if you don't have these four things. These four things are wilaya, brotherhood, the right people, and secrecy and innovation, right? This is how I term them, and I'll discuss them very briefly, each of them, in this second half of the session. So wilaya, we talked about this in the session, I can't remember which number it was, where we talked about the when we talk about the verse of wilaya, where innama waliyukum, this verse on the screen right now, innama waliyukum Allah wa rasuluhu, we talked about the concept of wilaya over there. We said how wilaya in the Quran, what does it mean? It means a strong bond between the believers, that cutting the bond of wilaya with non-believers, and over here it means tashayyu specifically, and obviously the wali being there. The source of this, the heart of this wilaya, is the wali himself, which is the one who is the imam of the time, appointed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in these verses. So the presence of the imam is very crucial for this system to work. So this system runs on wilaya, basically. That vein, that oxygen that goes through the whole system is the system of wilaya. Right? And again, I strongly encourage the believers, brothers and sisters, to go and really research about this concept of wilaya. Pick up the book that we talked about. So Ayatollah Khamenei's book that recently was published. The recent book by Ayatollah Khamenei on theology. He talks about wilaya over there. The different books that are out there. This concept of wilaya is crucial. And you find hadith about this, right? That that which bonds people together is wilaya, right? So you need this authority, right? This identity is wilaya. This system is worked by the leadership of an imam, of a ma'soom imam, who is the wali of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So this is crucial for this system to work. And you find that this system then requires brotherhood. This brotherhood, in fact, is the same as wilaya. I just put it as a second thing, but it's actually the same. We talked about wilaya in the Quran. We saw how it's one thing, right? The wilaya of the Ahlul Bayt channels itself through that brotherhood and sisterhood that people have, right? And so you find that there are numerous, like plenty of hadith where the Ahlul Bayt would strongly encourage the believers to get together. Yesterday you asked me, if it's such a secret underground system, how do people know about it? Through this wilaya.
Through this.
It is through wilaya that everything is, people is working fine, basically, right? When people get together in their house. So look at this hadith, for example, on your screen right now. So just one example of so many riwayat where Khaythama, Muskar ibn Khaythama, he meets Abu Ja'far alayhi salam, so Imam Baqir alayhi salam, they're meeting, gathering, etc. When he's about to leave, the Imam tells him something very important. Now remember, this guy is from a distant land. The Imam tells him, I want you to take a message for the Shias, right? فَقَالَ يَا خَيْثَمَا أَبْلِغْ مَنْ تَرَى مِنْ مَوَالِينَا السَّلَامِ. Give my salams to our Mawla, to our Mawla. Look at the word that he used, right? Mawalina means our Shias, right? Those who take us as Mawla. Well, I will see him with taqwa Allah, tell him to have taqwa and to help the poor, make sure that they're helping each other between themselves, they're very close. وَأَن تَلَاقَوْا فِي بُيُوتِهِمْ, and make sure that they meet in their houses. فَإِنَّ لُقِيًا بَعْضِهِمْ بَعْضًا حَيَاتٌ لِأَمْرِنَا, because the meeting of each other brings hayat to our amr. Right? So one, meeting in houses, this is crucial. Shias need to meet in the house. When they're a minority, when the mosques are not in their hand, they can't do everything in the mosque they want to do, right? The place where they have to meet is homes. That's why even today we encourage the people, the believers, get together in your house. Yes, we have Islamic centers, we have mosques, we meet there as well. But the jalasat, the gatherings of the believers in each other's houses is very crucial.
And it's got that closeness to it, right? You go to people's houses and it really strengthens that bond.
But with ihya'u amruna. Now this word amruna is very specific.
It comes a lot in the hadith, right? It comes referring to the wilaya of the Ahlul Bayt. Yeah.
Right? Not just the wilaya that we should love the Ahlul Bayt. At that time, this is a very important point. At that time, even the Ahlul Sunnah would love the Ahlul Bayt. Even now, actually. I'm going to say why I'm saying that. Even now, majority of Sunnis love the Ahlul Bayt. Our discussion is not about the loving the Ahlul Bayt. This is in the Quran specifically, very black and white.
The thing that differentiates the tashayyu' with the other sects is this idea that amongst the Ahlul Bayt, there is a specific appointment by Allah and obedience to them is the key, basically.
Exactly. That which differentiates is this point,
not
the love of the Ahlul Bayt. So when you say that to revive our armor is not just love of the Ahlul Bayt. That everybody has, all Muslims have this. Our armor is related to this wilaya, which is that authority, right? Which is related to this network of representative, because this is where authority is manifested, right? This is where they have to pay the khums. This is where the interaction with the Ahlul Bayt, whatever the Ahlul Bayt says, whatever the wakil says, I take my knowledge from the wakil of the imam who's appointed by the imam. I can't just take my knowledge from anybody. Who do I learn from? I learn from the person whom the imam said he's my wakil. Zakariya ibn Adam, Zurara, Muhammad ibn Muslim, Abdurrahman ibn Hajjaj, right? These are guys appointed by the imam. I, as a Shia, I have to go and learn from them. So this obedience is this amr, basically. This authority of the Ahlul Bayt. This authority is very important, right? Social, political, in every aspect there's authority, right? This amr is this. Where does ihya'u amr happen? In people's houses. This is why for this tashkilat, this network to work of the representatives, you need people to get together home. And this happens through this true brotherhood. Mm. And this is why we have.
And I guess this is the way you can know a true Shia from somebody, an imposter or somebody we're not too sure about. And this is how the messages can pass as well.
Exactly. So this is why the wakil will be known. This is why how the message will praise. Okay, if you want to give your homes, I know the wakil who is. This is where things happen, basically. Right? This is why it's so much time. So this brotherhood is very important. This identity is very important. The Ahlul Bayt would very often encourage the Shias to maintain this identity. And this is lessons for us. All these things are lessons for us, right? One of the things, for example, about this identity is the Azadari of Imam Hussein, for example, right? That get together, cry for Imam Hussein. This plays part in an identity. The intidhar of the one who will rise and bring justice is part of the identity of the Shias, right? The authority of the Ahlul Bayt. These are things that bring people together, and this is very important. So discussions at people's houses is very important. Next is, so wilaya and the brotherhood and sisterhood. And the other thing that's very important for the system to work is the kind of people that will become the wukala. This is really, really important, right? The individuals that were selected to become the wukala were very specific people. So you start from the bab, right? The people who are the closest to imam are people who are very close to the imam. Not just physically, they don't happen to live in the same city. They're people who really are in terms of knowledge, in terms of piety, in terms of understanding the maqam of the Ahlul Bayt, they have this position, right?
And there's also that aspect of having wisdom, being able to keep secrets. I mean, these are really important characteristics that need to be
there. These are very, very important. So for example, let me give a couple of examples. Let's talk about Jabir ibn Yazid al-Jawfi, amazing companion, right? Fifth Imam, sixth Imam, right? Like, he's a legend. Right, really an amazing personality. He's amongst the very high level wakala, perhaps even a bab for the imam. And his position in terms of knowledge that he has is tremendous. We find this very beautiful hadith. It's on your screen, it's in Al-Kafi. He's actually amongst the Ashab al-Sir. So we have this terminology used where there are certain individuals among the companions of the Ahlul Bayt that are holders of secrets. Now, what the secrets are, if you ask me, I'll tell you. I don't know because I don't hold those secrets. But we have indication of what these secrets are. One of the secrets, for example, is related to uprisings of the Ahlul Bayt, for example, or related to authority, etc., or the maqam of the Ahlul Bayt. Anyhow, he's one of those people who has secrets in his heart. He comes to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. Look how this hadith is. He comes to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam in Al-Kafi. He tells Imam that your father, Imam Baqir, had told me certain things that I wasn't allowed to reveal to anybody. It's hurting me. like my chest feels heavy because of, I can't tell this to anybody, right? You know, you have a secret. You want to tell people, right? So he says, do I have permission to say? Nah, your father's you, you're the mom. Can you give me permission to say? And Imam Sadiq says, no, you're not allowed to tell anybody still. He says, you know what? Go dig a well, go dig a hole. And in that hole, say that Abu Ja'far said this, Abu Ja'far said this. And then cover the hole again. He says, I did this and I felt a bit better.
Hmm. Very similar to Amir al-Mu'mineen when he goes to
the well.
Yeah, speak exactly. In the well.
Just to mention how these individuals were, the position that they had, right? They were holding secrets. So this Jabir ibn Ju'fi is amongst such people. We'll come back to him. There's a story about another story about him, which we'll come back a bit later as well. We find about Ayyub ibn Nuh ibn Darraj, the wakil of Abu al-Hasan alayhi salam, the 10th Holy Imam Hadi alayhi salam. Rijal of Najashi says, Adhimul manzala indahum. He's Adhim in his manzala. Right, ma'amunan wa kana shadidul wara kathirul ibada thiqatun min ar-ruwat. These expressions show how amazing these people were. Right, we talked about Mufaddal many times. Right, in Rijal al-Kashi it says that the Imam is talking about Mufaddal to somebody. He says, ya Muhammad, innal Mufaddal unsi wa mustarahi. That's how close Mufaddal is to me. Right? Like the Imam becomes pleased and happy when this is Mufaddal. These individuals are very close to the Ahlul Bayt. So the position of certain individuals and the way these people are is very important. So in another hadith, this is mentioned in Al-Kashi from Jamil ibn Darraj, who says that I entered in the presence of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, and there's a whole story where there's a few people passing around and he asks about some people and the Imam then talks about these individuals. Right? So he over here is referring to Zurara and Abu Basir and Muhammad al-Muslim and Buraid, etc. Big guys, basically. Look how the Imam talks about them. Hum nujum wa shi'ati ahya'an wa amwatan yuhyuna dhikra abi bihim. Right? Their lives, they're the stars of the Shias, right? The remembrance of my father and the deen and the removing of bid'ah happens through these guys. Right? The establishment of the deen is through these individuals.
These are those true Ansarullah, basically. Exactly. Those who have supported their imams. Exactly.
And we have so many times where the Imam would praise them. Regarding Abdurrahman ibn Hajjaj, the Imam would say, like he would do the manat of Paris, for instance. Paris is guaranteed for you. Right? The Imam would come to the grave of these individuals, pray for them so many times, tell the people about who they were and what characteristics that they had. This is very important. The proximity to the Ahlul Bayt is very important. The system of wakala works because of such individuals, right? Amongst their traits, obviously, is taqwa, the lack of attachment to this world, the knowledge that they have about the religion, about the Ahlul Bayt, etc. And obviously, as you go down the ranks, you realize that some of the wakala at the lower level don't have as much knowledge as the high wakala, basically. So they're ranked according to knowledge. When you say, for example, the A'alam, right? The most knowledgeable is the one who's closest to the highest level wakil of the Imam.
Obviously, the knowledge and the piety come hand in hand, right?
Definitely. Yeah. One thing that is specifically mentioned as amongst the characteristics of the wakala is, as you mentioned very nicely, is to be able to hold secrets, right? And number two is trustworthiness, right? So these two are very often repeated. Being thiqa, being somebody I can trust and rely on. Because remember, for the system to work, okay, you need the person to be trustworthy. Otherwise, people won't be using the system anymore, right? If I, as normal Shia in my city, my wakil in the city is not very reliable. I'm not sure if he's taking the money back to the Imam or if he's eating half of it himself. System doesn't work, right? These individuals, those wukala, need to be very trustworthy, right? That people, when they look at them, it's like, yeah, I can trust this guy. This is very crucial. Right, so you find that these two are very much repeated many times again about the wakala. Very interesting story. We find that some of these companions, they come to Husayn ibn Ruhin Nubakhti, right? A scholar of his time, during the Ghibat al-Sughra, right? A scholar of his time. They come to him asking him, how come you were not selected as a wakil, as a naib of the imam, and Husayn ibn Ruh was selected as a third naib, right? And you know what he says? He describes and he says, look, I'm doing a lot of things as well.
right? But the reason why Hussein ibn Ruh was selected is because he was able to hold secrets, able to hide things. This is very beautiful, right? Hussein ibn Ruh is not known as a scholar of his time, as highest level scholar, right? So you find that sometimes, even knowledge is sacrificed at the expense of what? These characteristics, being trustworthy and being a holder of secrets. And obviously, being able to manage things as well. So this comes kind of together. Holding a secret also comes to being able to manage personal, interpersonal skills, right? Being a manager, being able to hide things without mentioning things, right? This is very, very important. And so you find that amongst the traits of the wukala is that they're able to hold secrets. And so you find that this is very crucial. A very interesting example. You find in Kitab al-Ghaybah of Tusi, he says, amongst the wukala, there was a guy by the name of Nasr ibn Qabus. فروي أنه كان وكيلا لأبي عبد الله 20 سنة ولم يعلم أنه وكيل. That this guy was a wakil of the sixth holy imam for 20 years without anybody knowing that he's the wakil. Now, when he said nobody knowing about his wakil, it means it wasn't so much spread. Obviously, he was doing his duties.
Maybe his role was not even a role that required people to know him, right?
Yeah. But he's a wakil, not known, for 20 years, right? It's a holder of secrets, basically, right? This is how, وَكَانَ خَيْرًا فَاضِلًا. Like, he was great, a great individual.
It's an amazing trait, because sometimes you want to show others that, you know, I'm trusted by the imam. It's sort of that self wanting to show itself that, you know, I have this position. But even that, they're able to control enough so much that they don't boast about the position that they have in this whole system.
And so this is why one of the things that you find that is essential for this system to work, okay, and I move on to the last point, is secrecy, right? This system, now that you've seen everything about this system, right, and why we created this system and how it works, etc., you realize that if the system is an open system, okay, it'll never work.
Yeah, right? It's bound to fail.
It's bound to fail, right? The system, for it to work, and we know how important it is, because the imam has to and play his role as the imam, right? For the teaching of the religion, protecting of the religion, tarbiyah of the people, for collecting the homes, for the hukumah to happen, for the hujjah to be there. The system is important to be there. The system cannot happen if it's open, because you have enemies that want to destroy the system, right? And this is why the Ahl al-Bayt select individuals that have these traits of being trustworthy and of being able to hold secrets. And this is why the imam are so particular. Yes, you won't believe how particular they are about this, that you should not reveal to anyone about this. Secrecy and taqiyya is essential in this.
So this really puts into perspective, because often when you talk about taqiyya and secrecy, we feel like there is a personal fear. You know, why would imam be fearful of his life? But it's not about his own life or some other people's life. This is the life. This is a matter of guidance and misguidance, exactly, right? For imam to be able to guide in this scenario, losing his life is not the right thing. He needs to be alive and he needs to manage this whole system. So here, when he wants to protect his life and the lives of his companions, it's for that greater good. It's for that guidance. It's for the system to work, for the Shias to grow, for the truth to be spread more and more. It's not about cowardice. It's about actually courage and doing the right thing, basically. Exactly. So big wisdom behind it.
Exactly. So for the greater good, basically, right? So yes, things should be hidden, right? And because it's necessary for the system to go, for the whole system to work across the 200 years, we need taqiyya to happen. And this is why if you were to open the books and the riwayat about taqiyya, you would be surprised. Amongst the most fundamental things of that is specific to tashayyu is taqiyya. We've always lived as a minority across the centuries, right? And this minority cannot survive if everything was so open. I'm going to show you a few things right now. That how much taqiyya was necessary to happen in the system. We talked about Jabir ibn Yazid al-Jufi, right? Amongst the great companions of Imam Baqir and Imam Sadiq.
Yeah.
Nu'man ibn Bashir reports that كنتم مزاملا لجابر بن يزيد الجعفي فلما أن كنا بالمدينة دخل على أبي جعفر وده وخرج من عنده وهو مسرور حتى وردنا أخرجه etc. So basically they are going with Jabir, right? And they go to the house of the Imam. They reach Medina. So it looks like they're going to Hajj, basically. In any case, they reach Medina after Hajj. they enter in the presence of Imam Baqir. He goes to Imam Baqir's house. He spends a few some time with Imam Baqir in his house. When he comes out, Jabir is very happy, right? Then they were on their way back to hometown, which is Kufa, right? They're going back to their hometown. On the way, Jabir is happy, laughing, making jokes, right? Like, he just met the Imam for a few days. He's like joyous. Jabir is Jabir. Ibn Yazid al-Jawfi, may Allah have mercy on him and be pleased with him and makes us like him. He receives, on the way to home, a letter is received to him, right? He looks at the letter, checks it's from the Imam. It is from the Imam, kissed it, opened it. As soon as he reads it, he closes, puts it in his pocket, and the mood changes. Remember, Jabir at this time is a scholar, right? He's a recognized, reputable scholar, white beard, alim. Mood changes, but he doesn't say anything. They reach Kufa. This companion, Nu'man ibn Bashir, says the next day when I came to visit Jabir, I saw that Jabir is wearing torn clothes. He's dealing with children, playing like a child. I ask him, what's happened? He says, we don't know. Jabir seems like he's lost his mind. And over a few days, this happens. And he goes across town that the great companion, the alim of the time, Jabir, has lost his mind. At the same time, the Banu Umayyah appoint a new government in Kufa. An instruction comes to this government that there's a person called Jabir. He's actually amongst the wakala. You need to catch him and bring him, send him to Sham. The government receives this letter. He asks around. They say, no, don't worry about it. Allah solved it for you. And the guy's gone crazy. He says, no, I need to go check. He says, I went myself. I saw Jabir. The guy looks like he's gone crazy, basically. Writes to Sham and says, don't worry about it. Okay, I don't need to send him. The guy's gone crazy. He's no danger to you. After this, suddenly, Jabir puts back on his own clothes and he's back to normal. And so you realize, and he himself narrates him. You have different, this is what was in Kafi, in Kashi as well, he's reported the same thing as well. That he then narrates himself and says, the letter that I received from the Imam, but the Imam instructed me to act crazy for a few days.
This is, reminds us of Bahlul, sort of, right?
Kind of thing, yeah.
So Bahlul was, we know Bahlul to do this kind of thing.
Exactly, right? He says, that was difficult for me, but I still did it. And this is how his life was preserved. And we have plenty of hadith like this where the Imam would make sure that the people are taking care of hiding these things because their lives are in danger. Let me give one more example. During the year, between the year 282 and 288, the Abbasid Khalifa Mu'tadid, through his wazir, his name is Ruz Husayni, he actually finds a person who knows the names of the wakala of the Imam. This is reported in Al-Kafi by one of the wakils in the city of Baghdad, right? This is Ghibat al-Sughra now, right? The Abbasid Khalifa have now the names of some of the wakala. The people around the Abbasid Khalifa tell him, let's go catch them. He says, no, I want to catch them red-handed, basically, on thing. So they appoint spies to pretend that they're Shias and give them money, go give this to the wakil, tell him, this is Khums, I want you to give it to the Imam of the time. At the same time, because remember, one of the things as well is that the Imams also had spies. And we'll talk about this in a second as well. So the Imam, the news reaches the Imam. You find plenty of evidence of this, that the Imams also had spies.
Yeah.
Right? So the news reaches the Imam, right? From the Naib, the letter comes to the entire system. To all the big wakalas, that you are not allowed to take any funds anymore, okay, and do and cut off everything, pretend that nothing's happening, like a kind of a red alert letter is sent to all the wakala. So this guy in Baghdad, he says that we realize this was happening, and guess what? A person comes to me and says, "I'm a Shia, and please to me that I want to either meet the Imam or I have got some money. Can you please give it to the Imam?" Guess what he does? So what are you talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I have no clue, right? I don't know what you're talking about. He denies everything. Doesn't take the money. Now, it's possible this guy could not be a spy. This guy could be a real guy.
Genuine Shia, yeah.
But like, that's not important. Right now, for the safety of the wakala, right? For the safety of the entire system, right now, the instruction of the Imam is to stop every activity.
Well,
red alert right now. this spying is not the first time it happens. It happens so many times, right? That the Abbasid Khalifa would send spies to try and find out what's happening. And the people, the Wukala, had to be very careful and had different ways to find out who this is a spy or not. Let's talk about Mu'alla ibn Khunais. Mu'alla ibn Khunais is a bab for the fifth holy Imam. And he's for the fifth holy Imam, and at the time, sixth Imam as well. He's one of the very important Wukala of the Imam. A lot of praise for him, right? We have two views about him, but we also have a lot of very solid praise for him. Remember what I was saying about it's not black and white as such, right? Yeah. This person gets actually caught by, so something happens, he gets caught by Dawaniqi, right? Mansur Dawaniqi, the Abbasid Khalifa, he catches him through a person called Dawood ibn Ali, the police guard or the chief police at that time, catches Mu'alla. And Mu'alla is actually, so he tells Mu'alla, I want you to reveal all the names of the Wukala. And Mu'alla says that if they were hidden behind my feet, I would not lift my feet to tell you where they are, who they are. Mm. And you find this actually repeated many times as well, where when the Abbasid would catch one of the Wukala, or they would catch one person, one of the things they want to find out is that, tell me the names of the people. I want the list. Just like we mentioned the 12th Imam's story right now. Thereafter, who is what? What's, they can't understand that the whole system running around, right? They've got news that, okay, something's happening, but I want to know. So they catch this guy, right? And they ask him, like, reveal the names. And he's like, I'm not going to reveal. By no cost, I will reveal. And he gets tortured and killed. And then he doesn't reveal. It's very interesting. Imam Sadiq, after Mu'alla passes away and is made shaheed, Imam Sadiq gets up. You find this very rarely that the Imam goes and complains. Imam gets up and goes into Dawood and really strongly and sternly complains to him. Say, how dare we? What right did you kill our companion, right? Our wakil. Right, but very interestingly, when Mufaddal ibn Umar comes to Imam Sadiq to pay his condolences, he says, like, what day has come to the world of tashayyu that we've lost a person like Mu'alla? The Imam says it was his own fault. Mm. He didn't manage to keep secrets. Mm.
So on one side, he was a good person. He shouldn't have been killed. There was dhulm done on him. But that was a sort of him letting out something that resulted in
this fate, basically. So somehow Mu'alla wasn't very careful, right? Mm. And because of that, he got killed. So the Imam obviously is very sad, very upset by one of his wakils to be caught. But he's telling this companion, this wakil, why? Because I want you to learn. And actually, somebody else comes away. We have two reports. When another companion comes to the Imam to say that what happened to Mu'alla. And the Imam tells him as well, this was his own fault because he wasn't able to hide things. He's not telling this because he wants to talk bad about Mu'alla. He wants the wakala right now to learn. Guys, this system needs to be placed in a way that it remains secret. Secrecy is very important. Taqiyah is very important in the system.
Mm.
So you find, for example, in Mahasan, Kunna Jama'atan in the Abi Abdullah fi Manzilihi, where people at the manzil of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. There's a whole story over here. This point is what I want to mention over here. The Imam tells his wakala, right, his people, that La tudhi'u amrana. Don't spread our amr. Remember, we talked about what's amr. We mentioned that what
authority.
Don't spread it. Don't reveal it to others, right? ولا تحدث به إلا أهله. Unless it's somebody who is ahl, who is amongst you, has this wilaya,
has this understanding, he can understand
exactly.
This.
And thus, don't spread it. Don't talk to anybody about it, right? فإنه مضيع علينا سرنا. أشد علينا مؤونة من عدونا. Because those who do this, they're actually worse than our enemies. It hurts us more that our Shias go and can't keep secrets. It's worse for us than our enemies. It causes more damage.
So basically, it's important to understand that this is not a matter of guidance or misguidance, right? Right. It's not that Imam is saying deny them the guidance of our message.
Yeah.
It's this secret. Don't say the secret to them. Obviously, if you know that somebody is able to accept this understanding, then you give it to them. So this is something that needs to be paid attention to as well.
And we have, I mean, the whole system is for that. It's for guidance, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, we have to sacrifice lives for guidance, and obviously guidance has to happen. But there's always the greater good, right?
Mm-hmm. And there's wisdom in all of this. Yeah.
Definitely. So taqiyah is very, very essential over here. And I mentioned this point yesterday as well. We have to realize that it hasn't been easy for us to be able today to sit over here and be Shias, right? A minority group of people under such oppression and dhulm, to be able to sit over here and have all this, what has come to us in terms of knowledge, in terms of the history that's come to us, basically, it's amazing. And people had to die for it. I mean, look at such a hadith. In Ghibat of Tusi, Muhammad ibn Faraj says, قَالَ كَتَبْتُ إِلَيْهِ, talking about Imam Hassan Askari, أَسْأَلُهُ عَنْ عَلِي ibn Rashid وَعَنْ إِسَى ibn Ja'far ibn Asim وَعَنْ ibn Bandi. I asked the Imam, this 11th Imam, about these three individuals, the wakala of the Imam. وَكَتَبَ إِلَيَّ, and the Imam writes back to him, ذَكَرْتُ ibn Rashid رَحِمَهُ اللَّهِ, you mentioned ibn Rashid, may Allah have mercy on him. فَإِنُّ عَاشَ سَعِيدًا وَمَاتَ الشَّهِيدًا, he lived a very beautiful life, and he died as a shaheed. And you وَدَعَى لِيَبْنِ بَنْدِلْ وَالْعَاسِمِ, and you mentioned these two as well. One of them was hit by an iron weapon and killed, and the other one was lashed 300 times on top of a bridge, and then his body was thrown into the river, right? The Dijla River. People lost lives. We talked about Mufaddal, we talked about Mu'alla, we talked about all these individuals, Abdurrahman ibn Hajjaj.
They put their own life at stake for, in order to spread this message of the Imam, in order to carry out the mission of the Imam, basically.
Basically, this thing hasn't really reached us so easily, right? People gave their lives for this. The system had lost a lot of their wakala, and the Imam was very sad about this. To ensure that this has happened, the Imam was very careful to protect the wakala. So, for example, we have stories where one of the ways the Imam will protect the wakala is to help them when required. So, for example, we find that in a story where the Imam, Imam Jawad, this time over here, he prays for somebody because the person is Muhammad Hamdani. He writes to Katab to Ilabi Jafar, writes to Imam Jawad as-salam, Asifu lahu sun as-sami fiyya. The guy called Sami, he's pestering him. It feels like this Sami is probably a spy from the Abbasid, kind of very close to getting realizing what's happening with this particular wakil of the Imam, Muhammad al-Hamdani. So he quickly asked the Imam, said, I need help over here. This guy's pestering me. فَكَتَبَ بِخَطِّهِ عَجَّلَ اللَّهُ نُصْرَتَكَ مِمَّنْ ظَلَمَكَ وَكَفَاكَ مَعُونَتَ. So Imam prays for him, says, don't worry, it'll get solved. And actually, it gets solved. Right? We find that in another story, Ali ibn Ja'far gets caught. Big companion gets caught by Mutawakil. Right? Mutawakil swears and promises that he sends him in prison and he's going to kill him. Right? Somehow the other, Ali ibn Ja'far manages to write Imam Jawad. This is mentioned in Kashi. Imam Jawad receives a letter, realizes what happened. He goes on a Thursday night, makes a special a'mal, a special dua, by which Mutawakil becomes ill. And in his illness, he instructs all the prisoners to get free. They mention him, Ali ibn Ja'far is also within them. He says, I don't care. Free him, I need to get better, basically. And this is how Ali ibn Ja'far is saved. So the Imam has got his attention on the wakala as well, that he gets involved in one way or the other to try and save them. The other way is obviously through taqiyah. So for example, we find that the Imam places Nuh ibn al-Darraj as a qadi, as a judge. Now, you know, judge in that position.
It's an important position in the government.
Exactly. It's a very, very important governmental position. The qadi of the time is very important. So Nuh ibn al-Darraj, so this is mentioned in Najashi. He says about Nuh ibn al-Darraj, kana min salihi hadhi al-taifa. So, sorry, this is mentioned in Najashi. Azimul manzala indahuma ma'amunan wa kana shadidul wara. وَأَبُوهُ نُوح بن الدَّرَّاج كَانَ قَاضِيًا بِالْكُوفَةِ. So his father was قَاضِي بِالْكُوفَةِ وَكَانَ صَحِيُّ الْإِعْتَقَادِ. He was a Shia. So this wakil, Nuh ibn al-Darraj, his father is a qadi in Kufa and amongst the Shia. The famous example of this is Ali ibn Yaqtin. Ali ibn Yaqtin, what a companion, subhanallah. Like if you write a book about this person, you realize how amazing this companion is. He is amongst the highest wazir of the Khalifa, the Abbasid Khalifa, trusted by him, right? But he's a companion of the Imam Qadim. He's very much involved in transferring of funds, right? And the Imam tells him, I want you to be there. Even though Ali ibn Yaqtin says, I don't want to be over here. Why am I working for a Zalim, for a Tawud? The Imam says, no, I want you to be there. Why? Because you're helping our Shias to this work. Through you, Shias are protected. Through you, the system is able to work very strongly, right? And so he does his best. And in this, you have stories about him. For example, very briefly, this is mentioned in Kharaij, that the Imam, for example, tells him for a certain period of time, the Imam tells him, do wudu like the Ahlul Sunnah. Why? Because Harun is becoming suspicious about you. Right? So Harun had spies for everybody. He even had spied for Ali ibn Yaqtin. Right? So a spy comes and says, look, we have suspicion that Ali ibn Yaqtin is involved in the system. Right? So Harun gets really upset, sends a couple of spies to him to make sure that, to check, and they actually see that he's doing wudu like the Sunnah. He's like, don't worry, this guy's safe. Right? Or in another story as well, we find that a slave complains to Harun, says that Ali ibn Yaqtin is a Shia amongst a very high level wakala. Harun doesn't believe in him. He said, look, I'll prove it to you. The gift that you gave to Ali ibn Yaqtin now is in the presence of Imam Qadir. You know what? Do one thing. Ask him to bring it to you right now. Catch him, tell Ali ibn Yaqtin, bring you the gift that you gave it to him. And in fact, the story goes that Ali ibn Yaqtin had really sent the gift that he had received from Harun to Imam Qadim, and Imam Qadim actually returned back to this to him. And so when the spy, and when Harun comes and calls Ali ibn Yaqtin and says, can you bring me the gift that I give it to you? He says, no worry, I'm bringing it to you. And he actually brings it. Right? So you have different stories whereby he has to do taqiyah. And obviously Ali ibn Yaqtin is doing proper taqiyah, right?
Yeah,
yeah. He's hiding his faith. Yeah. Because it's working for the system.
So it's interesting because sometimes we find that, okay, why is Imam, for example, teaching the wrong wudu to this person? You know, why is he misguiding him? Whereas when we put this in the context, we realize that he's not misguiding him. He's actually telling him, do this because this is going to protect your life.
Yeah.
So it's really important to put these into that bigger context.
Just like we have aklumite, right? You can eat the dead corpse, right?
When it's necessary.
When it's necessary, yeah. Something over here. For a particular amount of time, you can do wudu like the Ahlul Sunnah, but to protect your lives. Your position is essential over here. I mean, so much goodness happened because of your position, that taqiyah has a very important role to ensure that this happens.
Yeah. There's also the other aspect where the Imam would sometimes speak ill about his own companions. I'll just come
to that, exactly. Okay. So when you find riwayats from the Imam cursing the likes of Zurara, right? Talking bad of some about the wakala, right? Distancing himself, saying, no, I don't know this guy. This guy is not very good. This guy is like this. How do you reconcile these hadith and what you know from history about these individuals?
Those things, that the good that we know about them is not questionable, right? So it shows that there's something wrong about this. Either exactly. It's fabricated, or if we put it in the context, we can find that maybe it's most likely that the Imam is trying to protect their lives.
He has to. And in fact, you have companions that come to the Imam and ask him, we heard your father say bad things about the companions. And he explains, says, if I hadn't done so, their lives would be in danger. Very clear from hadith. So if I hadn't cursed them, if I hadn't said bad about them, if I hadn't distanced myself from them, they'll be cursed. The Imam wants this system to work. The Imam wants to preserve the lives of the wakala. He's cautious. He's taking care of them, right? Mm. And so he distances himself from them just to make sure that they're protected.
Yeah.
It's essential. Otherwise, nothing works. It's a very natural system. Like, I'm not inventing something.
No, the system is natural. It's just like, it's so much like, you know, before we think that it's all about, you know, we don't see the Imams in this light of carrying out this kind of important systems. We always think that, oh, it's all about rising and fighting. You know, this is how to fight the oppressor. You rise and you fight and you die, and then the next Imam comes and so on. You don't realize that, wait, there's other ways to tackle the zalim. There's other ways to go about it. It's not all about rising and with the sword, basically.
The main important thing is the roles of the Imam had to be done, and this system is implementing these roles. Basically, the Imam is working with his roles through the system.
Yeah.
So he has to preserve the system, and taqiyah is important in this, right? It's a very logical thing. I mean, you don't even have to have any kind of find a magical portion and magical hadith to where this taqiyah comes from. It's a very logical thing for the system to work.
Mm.
This has to be there.
Yeah. I guess companions like Zayd ibn Ali, who might have been sons of the Imams and good people, but not necessarily appropriate to be, for example, a wakil. Correct?
Yes.
So just because somebody is a good person doesn't necessarily mean he has to be a wakil. And for example, his understanding might be different, that might lead him to go and rise physically against the oppressor. And when we find that Imam tells him not to do so, not in a way to reprimand him, but to tell him, look, you're going to do it, but it's not going to have any fruits. Yeah. Right now, this is not the right time to do it.
Unfortunately, I feel that we've done a lot of injustice to Zayd. Zayd, at the time Imam Baqi, when he's about to rise, Imam Baqi tells him, I don't want you to rise. You know what Zayd does? He doesn't rise. Zayd, at the time Imam Baqi, doesn't rise because Imam told him not to do so. At the time of Imam Sadiq, he has permission to rise.
Hmm.
Inshallah, this is a story for another day, where Imam Sadiq's time, there was a period of time where Imam Sadiq was about to become the Khalifa. Right? Zayd was allowed to fight. And this is why Imam Sadiq cries for Zayd when he becomes Shaheed. This is why Imam Sadiq instructs his wukala to send some money to the family of Zayd. We saw this hadith yesterday. The family of Zayd receives money from the Imam because they deserve respect. The family of Shuhada.
And I think Zayd is one of those people that we have both a hadith pro and against it, right? Again, for the Imam showing his distancing himself from this rise again to protect this whole system.
Exactly.
But when the right time is there, then he also shows that, no, this was my taqiyah, but I actually support what he did.
Yeah, so at some point, the Imam is not supposed to reveal that there's supposed to be an uprising. Obviously, he can't. If you have an uprising that everybody knows about, it's not called an uprising anymore, right? For it to be successful, it has to be underground, right? In any case, Zayd, there's a lot of research that needs to be worked on Zayd, right? Zayd ibn Ali. And what happens after Zayd with the sons of Zayd, for example, and the whole movement of Zayd that happens, there's a whole story behind it. It's not as simple a thing. Zayd himself is considered like somebody who listened to the instructions of the Imam. And the Imam, at least Imam Sadiq al-Assam, was very sad upon hearing the shahada of his uncle. What happens later after Zayd and the continuation of that movement is another story. In summary, we talked about what is required for the system to work, right? Amongst the different things that we mentioned, so for wilaya and the brotherhood, and the traits of the individuals that are the wakils of the Imam, as well as the secrecy and innovation need to happen. So secrecy, taqiyah, is very important. You can't work without it. I gave loads of examples, and there's plenty more about how the spies were so much involved. Abbasid had loads of spies, right? That would kind of try and catch people. Is it the wakil? Is it not the wakil? We had that so much time. So the wakil had to be secretive, and they had to be innovative as well. And this is why they have so many stories about there being
The cucumber, selling the cucumbers, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Or being an oil seller, for example, right? So they're known as Samman, for example, the one who sells oil. Or for example, the story of where the Imam sends a letter in the stick, for example, right? So all these stories show that they had to be innovative to make sure that this system remains underground. And we saw how people, when it actually was revealed to certain people, when things went wrong, people were killed, right? The wakala were caught, many of them died. Many of them were put to prison, lashed, killed, tortured, right? We have about Ibn Tawil that they amputated his arms, cut his legs, right? And he was brought to Shahada like this, right? We have about this guy who was lashed 300 times on the bridge of Delja and then thrown into the river, right? The companions and the wakil had to suffer a lot.
Mm.
But the Imam was trying his best to make sure that this doesn't happen.
So I guess the next section after this would be to go into the wukala of the 12th Imam and understand how the system moves into Ghaybat al-Sughra, and then from Ghaybat al-Sughra into Ghaybat al-Kubra, and so on.
That's
so
correct.
Yeah.
But before we do that, very briefly, if you don't mind, I want to discuss about when things go wrong. So the last discussion that we want to have, very briefly, inshallah, is that the system also sometimes goes wrong, right? And the point that I'd like to make over here, and very important point, is that the reason why it goes wrong is because we're dealing with normal human beings, right? At the end of the day, these are in people who make mistakes, right? And the Imam deals with people according to what is apparent, right? Yes, the Imam has knowledge of the ghaib, right? But we've said time and time again, right? When it comes to these duties, the Imam, the us at least, right? The primary way that the Imam deals with things is very naturally. So you have companions of the Imam who have piety, who have akhlaq, and because of that, they're appointed as wakil. But for various reasons, okay, these individuals turn out to then betray the system, betray the Ahlul Bayt, right? Now, certain reasons are mentioned. Obviously, one of the biggest reasons that is mentioned is the love of this world.
Yeah. So we need to remember that free will is never taken away from us. Even though we have a high position, we're susceptible to be deviated.
Basically. Exactly. So this is very, very important. So these individuals, you can imagine, right? I mean, you start very low. You become the wakil of the imam, right? Suddenly there's millions of money coming through. Now it's very tempting, obviously. Mm. And so you find that this is the main reason given for waqf, for example. So we talked about this before, that amongst the very big challenge, so the system of wakala was very strong, but obviously got shaken a few times. One of the places where it got really shaken, like, I mean, this is where big tazalzul that happened, a very big shock to the system, was at the death of Imam Kadhim alayhi salam. Right? So the story goes whereby when Imam Kadhim passes away, certain of these high level wukala, right, they have with them a huge amount of money. Right? And because of that, because they want to keep the money for themselves, they don't want to hand this money to Imam Ridha alayhi salam, they claim that the Imam hasn't died, and they come up with different excuses to say that the Imam hasn't died, or that the Imam is the Mahdi, etc. And for this reason, they keep the money. And so a big shock happened because the people knew these individuals as big scholars, as the wakil of the Imam, the high-level wakils of the Imam.
So that sort of shock makes it like a bit confusing that, okay, what's happening?
Exactly. And so here's how the Imam deals with different things. So one of the things is the wakala themselves come up, and Yunus ibn Abdul Rahman comes and starts spreading the news that, no, these guys are wrong. These guys have betrayed. This is the haq. He talks about Imam Ridha alayhi salam. Remember the story we mentioned yesterday? They tried to buy him off with the money that they have. He refuses. Like, no, the truth has to stand. The Imam himself, very tactfully, very, very tactfully, distances himself from them, asks them to give the money back. He even challenged them openly to come and talk to him and discuss with him, right? So very tactful, the Imam takes certain actions and measures to make sure that the system carries on, and it does carry on, right? And these individuals very quickly are kind of like sidelined on the side, right? Many of the people actually turn back, right? So I don't want to go into the story of Waqf because it's a story in itself. But you find that many of the people of Waqf, they actually come back to the Imam, right? A couple of months later, a couple of years later. So for example, we have one story whereby one of the people who had 20,000 dirhams with him, he comes to the Imam and says, I had money of yours, of this khums, or the wujuhat, and I used it. Can you please halal it for me? The Imam says, fine, I'll halal it for you. Right? The person goes away, the Imam turns to his companion and says, he's been halal, it's my money, I can, paraphrasing, it's my money, I can do whatever I want. But he'll have to be answerable. Because when he was holding out the money and we used it during his waqf time, it was the people who were starving around him, the people who required that money. So you have to answer for it, right? So basically, this is how different ways the Imam dealt with these individuals, right? That the system has to carry on very strongly. And these individuals have to be sidelined.
One of my questions that then, why use a system that is prone to such mistakes? But then this, the natural process.
So right? The Imam makes the best effort to make sure this doesn't happen. He does his actual best. If you were to ask, for example, about these individuals who, like, let's say the people who led the movement of Waqifiyah, the likes of Ali ibn Hamza al-Bata'ini, right? If you asked about him, you say, at that time when he was made the Waqir of the Imam, there was no better person than him. Truly, there was no better person than him.
Yeah.
You would actually blame the Imam, saying, why didn't you take Bata'ini as a Waqir? Right? So the Imam is doing his best to run the system in the best of ways, but based on the zahir, based on the normal ways.
Yeah, and also the idea is not to employ angels to come into the work. We're employing human beings.
Exactly.
It's for their own tarbiyat and the tarbiyat of the people. And again, because it's based on free will, if a person, despite all the hujjah that's come to him, decides to turn away, well, this is the nature of free will, basically, in the natural world.
Yeah.
So it's bound to happen.
So it's bound to happen. And it does happen. And the Imam deals with it. And they manage it. And the system carries on.
And it's part of the test. And it's part of the whole process as well.
Exactly. Yeah. Because at the end, every person within the system is also tested. And, and the growth also happens with the system. The companions became great companions through the system as well, themselves. Yeah. Jabir ibn Yazid Jawfi wasn't Jabir.
Taking up responsibility makes you grow as a person.
Yeah. Exactly. So you find that one of the things that happened is this wakala, that would the wakala would actually sometimes betray the Imam. Right. So another story, a famous story, is about a person called Faris. So Faris ibn Hatim, he's during the time of Imam Hadi alayhi salam, towards the end of Imam Hadi's life, where this wakil, he's a high level wakil again, he actually gets into confrontation with another of the wakala of the Imam called Ali ibn Ja'far Hamani. So there's a dispute that happens between them. Right, I'm cutting a long story short. There's a dispute that happens with them, and the dispute is again shadid. It's very troublesome and actually shakes the system in a way that the report says that the Shia are now reluctant to give khums, right? Because they don't know what to do. The two of the big wakala of Imam Hadi are fighting between themselves, right? The Imam gets involved, but very tactfully, right? the whole story, like, I don't know, very summarized, it was very tactful. The Imam gets the first three sons' letter, takes the side of Ali ibn Ja'far, right? Very gently sidelines. He doesn't go straight on in, because he knows that if I straight on condemn Faris, for example, then there's consequences, right? People who are on his side, there's a lot of Shias that were on his side because he's a reputable figure. He holds a lot of money right now. We need to channel that money. He holds a whole region, right? So the whole money that's challenged through that region comes through him. Mm. I can't just throw him aside and...
We'll have a Pharisee coming out.
So the Imam, yeah, so he very tactfully, basically, takes a few measures across time, basically. And in the end, at the end, he curses the guy. Openly says, Faris is not my wakil. Very openly says that he's not my wakil. And sorts the system in a way that damage is controlled, right? And Faris is sidelined and the system carries on.
Mm.
So you find that there were circumstances where the wukala would actually hold off money, for example, or create trouble. There were other times where the wukala would actually get involved in committing sins. And certain sins were so great that the Imam would straight away intervene. These individuals are not supposed to be infallible, right? But certain sins that are not acceptable for wakil to do, the Imam will straight away come in place and remove him from position straight away, right? Write to him, write to the people, this guy's not wakil anymore, he's off duty, right? And he's replaced with somebody else. So the Imam would take actions, basically. It wasn't like he would just let things happen.
He was managing. He's very active in this. He's right. Not a passive watcher. He's
managing the whole system. So makes things very quickly and very strategically, basically, ensuring that the system is not shaken so much and the movement carries on. So in brief, there's when we talk about the reasons why things go wrong, so there's the wukala, and that sometimes because of greed of this world, they hold up money, for example, don't want to return it back to the Imam. Or for example, they have jealousy towards other wukala, right? Or for example, there's fasad and sins that are committed. Sometimes they get involved in wrong jariyanat, wrong sects and ideological matters, and which then causes them to be in trouble, and the Imam comes and sorts it out. Another thing that can go wrong, and so it does go wrong in the system, is whereby you have wrong wukalas that stand up. People that claim to be wakils, but they're not wakils, right? People that claim that I'm the naib of the Imam. No, you're not the naib of the Imam, right?
Yeah.
Again, the Imam's position in this. Sometimes you ignore it, because the best thing is to ignore these people. It's just they just died out, right?
Yeah.
Which is a very good strategy to have. Sometimes the Imam says, no, that these individuals, I can't not say anything. So he comes and gets involved and says, no, this guy is not my wakil, right? And places certain, gives certain ways by whereby you can recognize a true wakil from a not true wakil. There were certain signs at that time that were there for that. So for example, there's research that done about the system. There's a whole list of these individuals, the individuals that were wakils but then went against the system, betrayed the system. So there are around 10 to 15 names, and there's those people who claim to be wakils but they were never wakils in the first place. Again, there's around 10 to 15 names across the whole system. So this is just to show us that one is that we should never think we're safe. Obviously, anybody can fall, however high you are. But Ta'ini was not a small person. You can be very high and fall. And we have this in the Quran as well. The one who was in Surah A'raf, the one who was given from the Asma of Allah, he fell, right? And he became as worse as a dog, as the Quran says.
Yeah, so my need to be careful about the love of the world, which is one of the biggest pitfalls of this.
Exactly. Yeah. And as part of a normal system, these individuals, sometimes they were wakala and they fell as well. And the Imam had to come and make sure that through very strong management of the system, he dealt with these issues and his ups and downs and made sure that this system remains strong, acts in the best of ways. The tarbiyah of the people, the most important thing is the aitam of the Ali Muhammad. The Shias are the most important thing that they want, or the Muslims that want to be guided.
Yeah.
So the guidance has to happen, the tarbiyah has to happen, right? Through this system, this is the point and the purpose of this system, until we reach Ghaibat al-Sughra and Ghaibat al-Kubra, which inshallah we will talk about tomorrow.
Inshallah, brilliant. Thank you very much. So we still have a little bit of our journey left. So we'll continue inshallah in the next session. So brothers and sisters, a lot of new information, a lot to think about, and very interesting stories and insight into the lives of our companions and how the Imams were active and their relationship with these companions and how they dealt with the system. It really makes the Imams feel more human and more relatable to us. whilst at the same time being great role models. So a very insightful discussion. Thank you very much, Sheikhana.
Awesome.
And we'll continue with this very interesting discussion in the next session. So until then, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.